Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining the webinar today. If you are attending this webinar, our hope is you are interested in the International Education Administrators seminars in either India or Taiwan. What's unique about this program is it's definitely different than the core U.S. Scholar program where you're applying to research or teach abroad. These seminars are two-week sessions in the countries that are highlighted. So another note, we'll kind of go through the eligibility throughout, but we just want to make sure you're in the right place and you're tuning in. So as a quick introduction, we want to go through everyone who is part of this presentation today. My name is Sarah Causer. I am an outreach and recruitment analyst for the Fulbright Scholar Program, actually based out of the Houston office. I'm joined today by my colleague, Mary Roth Zeller, if you want to introduce yourself. And we're also, we have basically an honor to be including two stellar alumni in this presentation. Each one is from one of the countries listed, India and Taiwan. So we'll start with Joan Gable, if you would like to introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone. My name is Joan Gable, and I am the provost at the University of South Carolina and had the great honor and privilege of participating in the India IEA seminar through the Fulbright-Nehru partnership just this past March.
Perfect. And last but certainly not least, we want to introduce Brent Patterson, who was part of Taiwan's second cohort. Brent, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, hello everyone. I am the Assistant to the President and Chief of Staff at Illinois State University, and as I said, I took part in the IEA Taiwan program this past March.
Wonderful. So before we move on, I just want to highlight a few of the system updates. At the end of this presentation, we will have a Q&A session in the chat box that you can use on your screen. Feel free throughout the presentation to submit any questions you have either for myself or Mary Rolfe or for either of our panelists. So if you have something that's a little more specific about advice on crafting your application that you really want key points from Joan or Brent, please make sure to submit those. They're here. They want to get your questions. Additionally, the session is being recorded, and we'll put it online typically within 3 to 4 business days of the session, and we'll make sure to send that out to all of you since you have registered. And so without further ado, we will proceed. All right. So the Fulbright Scholar Program, many of you might be familiar with if you've attended any of our presentations or webinars in the past, was established in 1946 by a junior senator named J. William Fulbright. Its goal was to expand and strengthen the relationship between the people of the United States and the rest of the world. We often cannot stress this fact enough. To just keep that in the back of the mind of your mind when you're applying, is this is really a people-to-people diplomacy initiative. Going off of that, this program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and it is administered by IIE since its inception. All right. Moving on, in terms, this slide is Fulbright by the numbers. It's something that we really enjoy showing. We kind of speed through it as much as possible, but just to let you know, this program, since it was created in 1946, is getting so close to having almost 400,000 alumni. These alumni come from the full umbrella of Fulbright programs, be it the scholar side of the program, the student side, the teacher side, and even the specialist. This program is constantly being innovative and coming up with new ways to engage with people and trying to send them to the rest of the world. As you can see, there's about 800 U.S. scholar grants annually, and that does include these IEA seminar recipients for administrators. And you can also see that we're in over 160 countries. I know some of my other colleagues always enjoy pointing out the number of Nobel laureates and Pulitzer Prize recipients and try and encourage you, if that's a goal of yours, you're in good standings with this program. Next slide. Wonderful. So we did mention this program is for administrators, but one thing we like to highlight is within those 800 scholars, it does include the core side of the program that you might be familiar with some of your faculty members on campus if they've received, as well as those IEA seminars. There's one third, the third bullet on here doesn't actually have a pie piece because last year it was not recruiting, but that collaborative research really encapsulates the Fulbright Arctic Initiative. So in 17-18 they weren't recruiting, but for 18-19 they were. So in the future we'll get another little pie chart sliver for that program as well. All right, so if you are interested in the IEAs, as we said, this webinar is really to go over India and Taiwan, which in the next few slides, Mary Rolfe will actually dive really deep into both of those on what they're looking for, how many people will be awarded, so on and so forth. And she'll really give you some key information to digest. This overview pretty much just shows all of the different countries that the IEAs or the CCAS awards go to. When we say CCAS, that one is only pertains to Russia because it's a community college administrator seminar, so it's only open to people at community colleges. If you're interested in learning about any of these other countries, we do have webinars coming up throughout the rest of the year, as well as a really great overview over all of these awards that is archived on our website. Obviously, we want you to be interested in India and Taiwan and hope you will apply to those, but we want to make sure you're applying for the award that makes the most sense. As a keynote, we'll probably highlight this a few times. Throughout a cycle, and the cycle is listed on this screen, you can only apply to one award. So you can't apply to India and then Germany for February 1 of this year. You can only choose one. So make sure to choose the one that best suits your needs and your institution's needs. So as I said on a previous slide, these IEA seminars are two-week seminars in the country that you will choose. They're intended to have broad personal and professional impacts on the grantees. The experiences that you'll have will also impact yourself as well as your home campus. So do think about ways that this award will you can bring back to your campus, bring back to how you administer programs on your campus, dealing with study abroad students, dealing with international students, dealing with ways to internationalize your campus. Keep those things in the back of your mind and make sure to make those connections. You'll also, on these programs, gather increased knowledge of the host country's higher education system, and those are things that you can also bring back to your campus. This program will aid in the development of programs on your campus. It will aid in the development of how you deal with international student advising and broader global collaboration across the campus and across any of your partnerships. Additionally, we want to highlight that grantees will also broaden their networks with possible partnerships and cooperation through other IEA grantees. So you are going as a cohort. Sometimes they're as small as 5 cohorts up to, I believe we have a cohort of 20, and I think that's for Germany. But you will be traveling with those cohorts of people, so you'll be making those networks and connections along the way. The key component of this program is it's important for applicants to think about their application in relation to the university, as I said. It's not just a personal application, but more broadly one that aims to increase institutional internationalization. So again, these kind of common threads stay throughout these programs. And lastly, we always just sum it up as this is a wonderful opportunity. It allows you to experience the host country through the guidance of locals. So definitely keep that in mind. They're great programs, they're short-term programs, and they allow you to really fit them into the needs that you have throughout the year. And we know you guys are busy throughout the year. So you might be wondering what makes you eligible for these programs. First and foremost, this is the U.S. side of the program, so you must be a U.S. citizen by the time you go on the grant. So unfortunately, if you're just a green card holder, you're not eligible for this program. One of the key differences about this program is you do not need to have a PhD or a terminal degree. It is not required like it is in many cases for the U.S. core side of the program. So just make note of that. You can have one, but it is not required. Additionally, just make sure that you are meeting the professional experience that is indicated on each one of these awards. Mary Rolfe will take us through the catalog of awards and show you where you can find that, as well as it will be written on the slides that are forthcoming. One thing, the last two, is additional requirements vary by awards. So you might see on one award that they're looking for something that's completely different than another. It might be one award's looking for 3 years of experience, another's looking for 5 years. You will see that stated on each award. And the last thing is when we do send these notes out, that hyperlink you'll be able to click. But new policies on Fulbright Scholar grants and the waiting period between grants is updated every year. So right now it's a 2-year waiting period, but you can have more than one grant. So perhaps you start here, you get inspired, in 2 years you want to come back and apply for a core award or maybe another IEA, you're more than welcome to do that. But definitely check with those policies as they are updated. And I think we also had a question that was submitted before this presentation, and it was about if someone had a student grant, would that impact? It actually wouldn't have an impact in this realm of things. It's just in terms of the realm of scholar grants. And with that, I think I will pass it over to Mary Rolfe.
Hi, guys. So thank you, Sarah, for the kind of general introduction to the Fulbright program and the IEA seminars. Now, the reason why you guys are here are likely because you're more interested in specifically India and Taiwan. So first, we are going to start with the India program. And so the Fulbright Nehru IEA program to India will allow grantees to visit universities, government agencies, NGOs, and more places in New Delhi and other major cities. And so the cities that you may visit outside of New Delhi vary each year to make sure that everybody's kind of getting a nice variety year to year of institutions and places to go visit and see. Participants will gain firsthand knowledge of a cross-section of Indian institutions and meet with high-ranking university administrators and public sector officials who will play key roles in the planning and administration of higher education in India. The seminar aims to achieve a balance of topical discussion, knowledge sharing, experiential excursions, and exposure to societal cultural facets of India. And so you're really going to get basically a sense of not just one specific type of university in India, but you're going to get a range of knowledge and experience and seeing different disciplines and how they all relate to higher education in India. So as you can see from the professional profile bullets that I have listed above, we're looking for applicants with at least 5 years of experience as international education administrators. So this can include foreign student advisors, study abroad advisors, foreign student admissions, personnel, different kinds of people, or senior level university administrators such as deans, vice presidents, provosts, and presidents. So this award is pretty open as far as being in certain levels of your career and timing of your career. As long as you have that 5 years of experience, you could be anything as far as an advisor or an admissions representative all the way up to a president. This is a good program to consider if you are looking at the internationalization of your institution as a whole. Kind of, I think about it holistically. And so there are some of these IEA seminars that are really focused on specifically increasing outbound students or increasing, you know, international students on their campus. India is really a little bit broader in what they're looking for from their applicants. They're really looking for people who just want to internationalize their campus, and that could mean through a variety of ways. That could be you setting up online courses and exchanging different information that way, so altering the curriculum to make it more international. This could be setting up exchanges and partnerships abroad. There are a lot of different ways that you can fit within the India program if you're not necessarily tied down to strictly working inbound or outbound students. And another, just the basic details about this, right? So the India and Taiwan, the reason why we're doing this presentation together is because they both have the same deadline, which is August 1st So that's going to be 11:59 Eastern Standard Time. If you happen to forget it, don't worry. You can always contact us, and we'll let you know again. The grant dates for the India program are going to take place sometime in March, so we don't have the dates completely set yet. If it gets closer to time and you're having issues with being able to apply or being able to have your supervisor give you leave based on the dates, you can always email us and we'll try to get those dates for you from the Indian Commission abroad. It is something that they decide, and so we're kind of waiting for them until they make the decision on the specific dates, since they're the ones that are organizing all of the visits and putting together the cohort and everything like that. Finally, just so you get an idea of the layout of the slide, the last bullet point is the link to the award description for the India program. And so that's going to have all the information you want to double check and read through, double read through, triple read through before you submit your application. Make sure you're addressing all of that criteria. Okay. So changing speeds, we went from India to Taiwan. So Taiwan is different, right? That's why we have two different slides for them. They're looking for different people. It's a different program. And so the U.S.-Taiwan IEA program is fairly new. Grantees will become more familiar with Taiwan's higher education system, society, and culture. There will be briefings, campus visits, appointments with selected government officials, cultural activities, and meetings with international education professionals. This program is interested in either senior-level administrators, so that these are your directors, deans, vice presidents, provosts, and presidents, and these are people who have a substantial international education responsibility at their campus. So we want to make sure that you have that internationalization component of your job, not that you're just this high-ranking senior-level official. So you can be a high-ranking senior-level official or a study abroad advisor with at least 3 years of experience. And so these advisors are going to be like your international student admissions, your outbound study abroad student advising, things like that. Applicants must be affiliated with a 2 or 4 year college or university or a nonprofit, an international education exchange organization. If you have any questions about your affiliation and whether or not you fit the professional profile, always send us a copy of your CV and we'll be able to help you out and decide, you know, where you best fit or if you're eligible for the program. For Taiwan specifically, there's a preference given to people without significant professional visits to Taiwan in the last 2 years. And so significant professional visits is going to be something like you're going there once a year, or you've been there, you know, extensively. You've spent 5 months there for a year, something like that. If you went once for one day to go see a conference, that's going to be okay. That doesn't put you out of the running, okay? Applicants for the Taiwan program should demonstrate and their institution's interest in increasing the number of American students studying in Taiwan. So this is really, really important. This is the key information that you need to take away about the Taiwan program, is that Taiwan really wants to see applicants that want to increase the number of American students going to study abroad in Taiwan. Also, please note that specifically for the Taiwan program, also for Japan and Korea, English language programs, so these are your directors or instructors in English language programs, are not going to be eligible for these awards. It's just not the type of professional profile that they're looking for. So Taiwan as a whole, you're thinking about it. So India, I was saying maybe if you're looking more at internationalizing your campus in with a holistic approach, maybe India is good for you. For Taiwan, if you are an outbound study abroad advisor, so you're looking at sending students overseas, and if your institution has a genuine interest in increasing their relationship with Taiwan and sending students to Taiwan, this is the perfect program for you. Okay, and then another note about Taiwan is sometimes we get a lot of applicants who are saying, you know, we just want to beef up the Chinese program on our campus or anything like that. That's not necessarily something that you need for this program. You don't have to have a high interest in China or in increasing your visibility with Chinese student populations, anything like that. Taiwan also just wants to see that you're interested in Taiwan. If you happen to be interested in breaking into the Taiwanese market because of your experience with either Chinese students or sending students to China, that's okay. But make sure also that you're conveying that you do have an interest in Taiwan and that your institution has an interest in Taiwan. Okay. And again, the deadline for the Taiwan program is going to be August 1st at 11:59 p.m. The grant will take place, again, sometime in March. If you need those specific dates, feel free to email us, and we'll try to get those to you when they're available. And you've got the award description there to view later, because we will be putting this PowerPoint online for you to access, and all the links will be active. Okay, so now that I kind of gave you a brief overview of what India is looking for, what the India program is, what Taiwan is looking for, and what the Taiwan program is, I want to talk about selecting the right award. And so this is a really important factor in your application. You know, you could be eligible for an IEA program, but if you're not picking the right award for you, then your chances of being selected are going to be a lot lower. And so we want to make sure that you're picking the right place. So one of the big questions to ask is, how has your campus been working to internationalize itself? You know, does it have a plan to increase cooperation with any of the IEA seminar countries? So does your institution have goals to be going to France more often? Does it need to beef up the number of Japanese students on campus? Anything like that. If those are part of maybe a 5, 10, 15, 20-year trajectory report for your university, that's a great place to start with priorities and what country you should go to. Like I said, are you guys looking to increase the number of students from any country? That's also a good thing to look at. Another thing as far as your suitability for a program, have you had significant professional experience in any of these countries? Significant professional experience meaning, you know, did you live over there? Did you study over there for a significant amount of time? You want to look and make sure that you're applying for an award in which you have an interest, but that you're not maybe overqualified for it. We want to make sure that you're still learning when you're going on these grants. And so, you know, if you lived somewhere for 10, 15 years, you probably know more about the German education system than we'll be able to tell you in 2 weeks on the seminar. These really are meant to be learning and professional development opportunities, and so you want to make sure that you'll still be able to gain something out of it. And then lastly, building off of that bullet we just talked about, is your professional profile. So we want to make sure, do you have the right number of years of experience? Are you at the right administrative level for the program that you're looking at? Are you senior level? Are you junior level? Are you somewhere mid-career? Do you have that ability to affect internationalization on your campus? All of those are things that you need to look at. Right. So we talked about, you know, where you should apply, but now we need to talk about how you apply. So there's a couple different things that are involved with applying. The first is making an application, right? And so that's going to be going onto our website, opening an account on the Embark application form. And so what you'll do, that's just your basic information, you know, name, education, that kind of stuff. But the real heart of your application are going to be in the attachments. And so the first is going to be your statement of intent. And so your statement of intent, we also sometimes refer to it as a project statement, because that's what those core teaching and research grants for Fulbright, they call it a project statement, but we've tried to rework it for you guys for IEA as statement of intent, because it makes it sound a little bit more appropriate for you guys, because you're not going to complete a project, you're really just intending to learn something on this experience. And so I've got a whole slide on the statement of intent, so I don't want to talk about it too much there, but I really will consider it the heart of your application. The next is a CV, so we obviously want to make sure you're qualified, that you fit that professional profile. The third thing is your letters of reference, so these are going to be three letters of reference. One will be from a current supervisor at your institution. The second should be a colleague that's familiar with your administrative work and your leadership skills. That can be somebody at your institution or just anybody that you've collaborated with in the past. The third type of referee you should have is a colleague that can speak to your personal attributes and interest in international education. And that, again, can be somebody that you work with at your home institution or that you've worked with in the past. I think that 2 and 3, so the colleague familiar with your work and then the colleague familiar with your personal attributes, are kind of, your referees can address both, right? You don't need to have one person only address this part of you and another referee only address this part of you. I think a lot of times there's a lot of fluidity between these two. The hard line being making sure that one referee is a supervisor that you have. We want to see that you'll be able to actually go on this grant and that your institution is supportive of you going and bringing back all this knowledge that you can teach other staff. Another part that is specific to the IEA program is this institutional statement. And so the institutional statement is this time where you've taken one or two pages to explain to us what your institution is. You know, is it an HBCU? Is it a community college? How many students are there? What the student population is like? All of this information for us to get a picture of, you know, what kind of people we're sending abroad. This is a cohort-based program. This is a cohort-based grant. And so we want to make sure to have some variety on these cohorts so you guys can learn from each other. And that's what this institutional statement can serve as well. Finally, if you guys have any questions, like I said before, Sarah and I are here to talk you through anything, but we've also created this IEA seminar checklist and instructions fact sheet for you guys in case it's the middle of the night, you're working on your application, and I'm not there to pick up the phone, typically within that 9-to-5 life. And so if you have those questions, this checklist and instructions sheet is actually going to be incredibly helpful, walking you through line by line with the application and telling you how to fill out certain parts of it. So I told you guys I would come back to the statement of intent and talk a little bit more in depth about it. So you want to talk about your current job responsibilities and how they relate to this grant. So in addition to your CV, we want to see an elaboration of your CV, basically. We want to see what you can actually do, not just what you're currently doing. We want to see the impact of your participation and how it's going to impact your career, your professional development, your home institution, and your community. So this is a lot, right? We want to see that you're doing a lot for yourself because it is professional development, but we also want to see that you're going to be able to do a lot for the university. I tell applicants it's okay to be a little selfish in your application. You should talk about what you're going to gain out of this as well. Another very, very important piece of the IEA application is why are you choosing this country? Sometimes this gets left by the wayside with applicants for the IEA program because they think, oh, well, I just want to go to this country, but IEA is the same for all of them. It's not. You're going to learn different things in each seminar. Each seminar is looking for different professional profiles. They're all special and unique for a reason, and so we want to see that you specifically have an interest in Taiwan or you specifically have an interest in India, and let us know about that and why. It can be a personal and a professional and an institutional interest. So we want to see, you know, how are you going to share this knowledge? We want tangible details and outcomes of how you're going to share this knowledge. Oh, I'll talk with my staff when I get back. We want to see, you know, what plans are you going to be putting forward? Who are you going to be meeting with? What kind of projects are you going to implement based off of this grant? Another piece is how are the IEA seminars going to contribute to the international education goals of your institution, right? And so that's bringing in why is this grant going to be important for your institution? What kind of impact are they going to have by, you know, letting you leave for 2 weeks to go somewhere? How are you going to be able to give back to your host or to your home university? And then for your project statement, do not forget, like I said, each award is unique. Each award has their own specific requirements and criteria that they want you to address. So for Taiwan, they really want you to address how you're going to get students American students to go to Taiwan. For India, they really want to see how are you going to internationalize your campus and in what ways. One big piece that I have of advice for the statement of intent is when you are writing your statement of intent online on the statement of intent guidelines, we have 5 different criteria, which are similar to what's listed above. And I recommend color coding each criteria and highlighting in your application where you feel you address each criteria point. And then go back and look. You know, how colorful is your page? Is everything in blue? Did you only talk about one of those 5 bullet points? Is there a good variety? Did you completely address something at the expense of over-explaining another factor? The color coding is a good way to just see immediately how much emphasis are you giving on one page versus another, one criteria versus another. Also, make sure to have other people read your statement of intent. It's okay to have people proofread and to collaborate with to make sure that, you know, you're not just saying everything that you think you're saying, but it's actually still stuck in your head. You want to make sure that everything is coming across. Okay. So, review process and timeline. I've included all of the grant timelines up here. However, the one that's probably the best and most important for you guys is Taiwan and India, which is up top. It is the first of the IEA seminar deadlines. Deadline will be August 1st, like I've said. What will happen is then in November, your application is going to be reviewed by peer reviewers. And so these are going to be former IEA and Taiwan and India alumni. And they're going to be reading your application to see if they think you'd be a suitable Fulbrighter. Do they think that you'll get along in a cohort? Do they think that you have something to learn from this grant? They're using their prior experience overseas in country on this type of grant to see if you'll be a good fit as well. And what happens out of that peer review is they'll either recommend or not recommend you. If they don't recommend you, you'll receive an email saying, you know, thank you for your application. However, you aren't moving forward with application review. Please contact us for information on how to improve your application next year. Or you'll get the email that says, congratulations, your application is being moved on for in-country review. And what that means is that if you apply to India, the Fulbright Commission in India will read your application, and then that's when they're really narrowing down and deciding, you know, of the approximately 10 grants that we have to give to India, this India cohort, who do we want to choose? And so they're the ones that are looking at all kinds of factors. They're looking at the quality of your application. They're also looking at, you know, female to male ratio or, you know, large institution to small institution, you know, rural versus city institutions. They're looking at a lot of different factors to build this ideal cohort for them. Then what's going to happen is in December, the finalists will be notified. And so you will find out, you know, congratulations, you've received a grant, or we're sorry to inform you that you haven't won a grant this year. However, if you get through the recommended phase, I would encourage you to reach out to us and try to apply again. We're happy to provide feedback on applications and try to really see where maybe you went wrong. I'm happy to review project statements, those statements of intent again, and help you guys get through it. I want everybody to succeed that's applying, and so I will do as much as I can to help you guys get there. Finally, in March, if you are selected for a grant, you'll be going overseas, and that's why we have our alumni here today that will be able to talk about a lot of the facets of the program. So with that, I'd like to open the floor to Joan, who is an alumni of the India program. She was very excited to come here today. We're very excited to host her today because we want to hear all about her experience as an applicant and also as a grantee.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I am really very excited to be here. It was an amazing experience. I'm going to start in the same place where I'll probably finish and say that there are several steps to go through. As you've heard, it is an investment to apply, but 100% worth it. It was really very transformative for me and then allows me to be transformative back here at my home university. So just a little bit about me and why I chose to do it, because I think that sets the tone for the process and what I then gleaned from the time there. So University of South Carolina is, you know, a big flagship state school. We have a lot of international activity already. We were not coming to this either on my own behalf or for the work that I do in internationalization on behalf of the university to begin the process of internationalization, but we had a very particular interest in India that I described in my statement of intent, and we had a real interest in understanding the Indian higher education system, which is very different from ours here in the United States, and how we could just learn from that in terms of other ways to explore how we do what we do. They've been so successful there launching innovative and outside the box, to us, or in my experience, I should say my own box, outside my own box, ways of delivering really, really world-class education that are different and that I didn't know much about except for what you would glean from popular press or hearing from colleagues who pursued their education in that way. So I wrote my materials. I had lots of colleagues review them. It's been a long time since I did anything quite like that because I have not been publishing scholarship since I've been in this role. And so I really did kind of go back to old skills that needed a little dusting off, and I needed the input and benchmark of colleagues. So that, in a way, was really lovely for those of you who are full-time administrators who don't write your own applications every day or aren't writing your scholarship as frequently as you used to. That was actually a very nice experience to go back to pen to paper and really think about a problem I was trying to solve in a manner of speaking. Why did I want to do this and expressing why I wanted to do this? And you also write about your institution, and that was a very useful exercise in its own right, too, to really describe to someone who, as if they don't know you at all, what your goals are internationally and what it is you're trying to accomplish. So for me, there is a labor involved in doing the application, but absolutely worth it and then some. So then the experience itself is, as described, 2 weeks long. You'd be amazed how much you can do in 2 weeks. It is a cohort. You are together in a very intense way. So they put a lot of energy into picking people that complement each other intellectually, personally. It is a diverse group of people in their backgrounds, in their goals, but everybody is eager to learn. You have this really common spine of curiosity, and that creates, I think, an inherent compatibility that was incredibly lovely for my group. Great people. Just the most wonderful time together, you know, breaking bread together, debriefing formally and informally. There was as much peer learning as a result of that part of the cohort experience as there was from the actual learning, more official learning experiences. So as described, we visited a variety of higher education institutions, colleges, universities, small, large, public, private. In India, there is a significant growth in privately funded institutions that have emerged of late, largely by people who've been entrepreneurs who've been highly successful, and in rather than making a philanthropic gift to a university, they open one and start a new institution, and some were religiously affiliated, some were not. We went to think tanks, we went to some government agencies, and of course we were in regular contact with the embassy, which is a very close partner and also in physical proximity very close, so we had meetings. They were members of the Foreign Service staff were speakers, and they were at a lot of our receptions. India, of course, is a large country geographically, and across the country, things shift pretty intensely culturally, many languages, different religions. And so for part of the time, we were in the hands, if you will, of the team that is based in Delhi, and part of the time we were in the hands of the team that is based in Chennai. Although the cities we visited were Delhi, which is the consistent city, and in our case, Kerala down south, and Coimbatore, which is also near Chennai. So we had the chance to meet several people who work on the in-country team and hear from them. So subject matter experts, cultural experts. It was a really robust three-dimensional experience. So in the superficial sense, I built up a nice stack of business cards from people from other institutions that I could call on again to the extent that we wanted to partner up. Yes, that happens, and that's amazing and very important. But I feel like I got the boot camp, for lack of a better word, on Indian higher education and how that ties into where things are culturally, governmentally, perspectives on globalization as they affect how you go through the educational pipeline in country and internationally. And I just learned so much about a place. I had been to India before, but for one conference for a few days. And so this was eye-opening on every level, both from the peers who participated, who we visited, and how everything was tied together. I feel changed as a result of it. I travel a lot. It's one of the gifts of our profession. But this was, I would say, next level. So I'll stop there and turn it back over to you.
Joan, that's a great point that you made about kind of the IA seminars being a boot camp of sorts. I actually might feel that in the future. So we'll hold off on some of the questions right now that we have specifically for you guys and go on and move to Brent, because I want to make sure that you have some time to speak about Taiwan as well.
Thank you. Hard to follow all those wonderful words from Joan. And as she was talking, I was thinking in some ways how similar it was, and in other ways very different. Let me start a little bit with my background and how it relates to the program and my interest. And I apologize if my phone goes off here. We're having a visit from the governor in 15 minutes that I've been organizing, and bad weather on the way. So I keep getting text messages coming in here. Let me just say, I spent about 35 years in student affairs work, including roles as dean of students and vice president of student affairs, and worked some with international, but mostly tangential, because on the campuses where I worked, international was in academic affairs. And about 2 years ago, our president here asked me to work on an initiative on how we increased international enrollment. And so I spent the past 2 years working on that specifically. So my interest really was a way to learn, perhaps in a short period of time, more about international education. I personally have traveled to Europe, but I've never been to South or East Asia. And this was an opportunity to really explore that area, knowing that the number of international students coming from East Asia and Southeast Asia are significant and would be a growth factor for us at the institution. So perhaps naively, but somewhat intentionally, I did not spend a lot of time studying about Taiwan and learning about the culture or higher education in Taiwan, which I think actually really benefited me in this process, such that I was didn't have any preconceived notions of what I would what we would encounter in Taiwan and learn about the country, the people, and higher education. And so, in that regard, I think that worked out well for me. Somewhat similar to what Joan was talking about with India, we spent the first week in Taipei, the capital of Taiwan, had visits with the Ministry of Education, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, the American Institute in Taiwan. There is not an official U.S. embassy in Taiwan. It's the American Institute in Taiwan. And we also actually had an opportunity to have lunch with the president of Taiwan. So from that perspective, some really great experiences in learning about the country and the people of Taiwan. We also visited about 14 universities over 2 weeks. As I said, the first week was in Taipei and around Taipei. The second week, we basically did a loop of the country of Taiwan, visiting universities throughout that time. I would say one thing I think Joan said, but I want to be sure to emphasize, this is not a vacation. This is a work. This is learning about a country, and you will be very busy, long days, but at the same time, they were so fulfilling in meeting people from Taiwan, meeting people in higher education in Taiwan, learning about their institution, their interests in educating students, having their students study abroad, but also very much U.S. students coming to study there. And if you're thinking about the program in Taiwan, I think what's I didn't really expect was the number of people who spoke English. And in fact, that many of the institutions have their programs are taught in English or have programs that are taught fully in English. So language was never a barrier in any way. I would say also that, as Joan talked about the group, we had wonderful group dynamics. And all of us who have been involved in putting groups together in various ways always wonder, what's this group going to be like? A very diverse group in terms of age, in terms of our backgrounds and what we do in higher education. But we got along very well. We spent time, obviously, together as a group visiting institutions and meeting with these other agencies. But we also spent time together in evenings and when we had free time on a weekend, going out visiting in Taiwan, getting to appreciate the real culture and the cultural activities in Taiwan. One thing I want to say, reiterate, this is an investment. It's an investment from the start of taking the time and the thought and the effort to put together your application. This is not something you can do at the last minute. I would certainly suggest that you start now if this is something you're interested in, and because there's a lot of thought that goes into the writing. I would also very much support Joan's comments about having others review what you write. And if you are on a campus where you've had you know people who have been Fulbright recipients before, have them look it over. If you're on a campus where you don't happen to have someone who is a Fulbright recipient, you can go online at the Fulbright website and find people who are maybe in your area or someone that you might have a connection with who are Fulbright advisors and would be willing to help you by reviewing things. That was very helpful for me. We have an unofficial Fulbright coordinator on our campus and worked with her on the application process and went through probably about three drafts of the application through that process. I would say, you know, this is really a transformational experience. When I came back, I met with that Fulbright coordinator on the campus, and we were visiting and talking, and I've met with other people on campus to talk about what we might be able to do between our university and universities in Taiwan. But our Fulbright coordinator looked at me and said, "You drank the Kool-Aid, didn't you?" And I said, "Well, I guess I did, that I've really become an advocate for the Fulbright program and opportunities that exist there." And so with that, I will stop so we have plenty of time for questions.
Hi, Brent. Thank you so much for your input about all of the from application to grantee to alumni to involvement in the Fulbright program post. I think it's all really important to know that, you know, you can still be involved in Fulbright after your grant ends. You say once a Fulbrighter, always a Fulbrighter. So you'll continue to be involved in the programs even after you come back to the U.S. So before we open up to questions, I just want to quickly go over a couple resources for you guys. And so what we have here is basically an entire page of all kinds of application links, and what I want to do is just go to the program website and from there show you what you guys have as far as availability for resources. So, this is the main Fulbright program website, and what you want to do if you ever want to go to the catalog of awards, which is going to be where you find those individual aspects of each of the IA seminars, you'll find them in the catalog of awards. going to be here. We're going to search all awards. And then what you can do is go down, and we will go to activity. And you want to pick the one that says seminar. And then we'll scroll down, search awards, and then you're going to see all the different opportunities come up. So we'll go on and pick on India, the first one that came up. And so this is a resource you definitely want to make sure to look over before you submit your application and while you're writing your application. You'll see that the grant length is 2 weeks. It'll take place in March. And we will try to update the catalog of awards with the actual dates of the program once we receive them. So you'll either see it here or you'll see it on our website homepage. If you go to the award requirements tab, this is the one that I think is really useful and kind of the most important part. The additional qualification information, this is what you really want to read and make sure that you are following, that you're addressing in your application, okay? And so all of this information is something to really look over before applying. Award benefits, so this will give you a little bit of information about the stipend. Country area overview, this can give you kind of just a holistic view of the country. A lot of these are written with the core award in mind. However, there may be mention of the IA seminar grants. Now, what you'll see over in this side, so you've got the Apply Now button, which will take you right to the application, which is awesome, and then you've got these application guidelines. So we want to click on that. And this will take you directly to the IA application guidelines page. I recommend bookmarking this page because this will be home base as far as helping you, you know, when it's 2 a.m. and we're not online, but you really want to finish your application for the night. This will be a good resource for you guys. So you've got statement of intent. Here are those 5 bullet points I was talking about color coding and highlighting in your application while you're writing it in your statement of intent. You've got just specific information about page numbers, margins, things like that. Everything that students ask while they're in college, a lot of times you guys are asking us for your applications. We've got institutional statement info. We've got CV information and reference letter information. And so these are a good place to start. You've also got a PDF version of the application instructions, which I highly recommend you use. When you apply in your application, download those. Oh, there we go. So this, again, it's really long, okay? You've got over 20 pages of text, but it's going to be so helpful for you. So I definitely recommend opening this when you open your application. That's a very quick and dirty version of the kind of overview of the resources that we have because I do want to have time for questions before everybody has to run off. And so I will go on and switch to the next part of the presentation, which is for Sarah to take back over.
All right, so yes, we'll go through this really quick because there's so many great questions. But obviously, we want you to apply for India and Taiwan. That's why you registered for this webinar, so definitely consider it. However, if maybe you thought this isn't for you and you want to look at other opportunities, all of the webinars are listed on this page as well as our website. Or perhaps you have your president or provost at your college that you might think would be a great fit, please direct them to the opportunity in France. That's a great opportunity for them. So that's another option that you can look at, is just passing this along to your colleagues both at your institution and outside of your institution. A quick note, in the past we had the Germany and France one together, but since the programs are just drastically different in terms of what they're looking for, we have separated them out. So just keep that in the back of your mind if you have already registered for them. And next slide. So with that, we're going to segue into the Q&A. This website, this slide that you're seeing is just saying how to contact us. Please note that the slides and the recording will be available in 2 to 3 days after this session, but we will email them directly to you when they are live. Previously, as you guys registered, you submitted a lot of great questions. I just want to sum up a few of them in case you missed certain information. You can only apply for one award, and this is not a combination of India and Taiwan. You're applying for one or the other. So no, in an academic year, you can only apply for one award. There were questions about changes in the date. Unfortunately for India and Taiwan, this is taking place in March. Please note this is an institutional investment as well, so your institution might be more considerate of letting you go because it is an investment of their time as well. If you are looking for a summer program instead, perhaps take a look at Japan and Korea. Moving forward, I think we'll start to, I have one that I would love to kick to either Joan or Brent. It deals with the finances in terms of, were you reimbursed for your materials and travel? Were there budget limitations? What did you face in those instances dealing with financial contributions?
You mean from our home institution?
I actually think it's from Fulbright. So how was the process for you personally with funding?
Okay. So for the India program, sorry, Brent, would you prefer to go first? I just jumped right in there. Apologies. But Fulbright books your ticket in consultation with you. They sent me several travel options, asked me a few preliminary questions, which airport do you prefer to fly out of, that sort of gave me special requests, and then sent me two or three options, and I picked one, and they booked it in my name. Hotels and transportation to the hotels are provided, and the vast majority of meals are provided. There are a couple of free days, and they actually gave us a budget in cash for those days because you are expected to be able to eat and sleep and get around compliments of Fulbright. But anything else you want to do, souvenirs, if you're staying on after or arriving early, if you decide not to eat with the group and go off on your own, all of that is yours. So you can participate in the Fulbright with literally zero out-of-pocket, and my own out-of-pocket was minimal.
Great.
Yeah, for the Fulbright Swan, it was very, very similar. The only thing that I would add is we actually had a MRT card, which is the transportation system in Taipei, since we used that for some of our visits to universities. But that also allowed us to travel in the evenings and on weekends using the MRT card, and we made good use of that card to go to different places around Taipei.
Great. Thank you both so much for that. We did have a few questions about people who have previously applied before and whether or not they are competitive or able to apply again. Yes, you are able to apply again. And one question I want to send to Mary Rolfe is, do you use the same Embark login? Mary Rolfe, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, so you should, if you've had a Embark account in the past, you should be able to use that Embark information to reapply as far as your username, email address, and password, things like that. The one caveat is that your application information as far as like auto-populating in the application likely will not carry over, and so you will have to fill it out again, unfortunately. But if you had an Embark application in the past, you should be able to use that account again.
Perfect. And I'm going to tag on to that another one for you, Mary Rolfe. If you have someone who has changed jobs after they applied, will that impact their application at all?
So, no. So I would recommend, it's happened in the past, right? Things happen, life happens, jobs change. And so I think something just too important to keep in mind is to try to make sure that you're still going to be able to impact your new university with your Fulbright grant. So making sure you'll still be able to internationalize or put into effect the plans that you were trying to implement in your old campus onto your new one. If you know that you are making a switch, or it's possible that you're making a switch, but it hasn't happened yet, I would honestly be hesitant to say that in your application. You don't want to give any of the reviewers a doubt about maybe your credibility as an applicant or your ability to be able to affect change in your application. And so, honestly, I would kind of just leave it off.
Perfect. And I do have one for you, actually, Joan. I hope you enjoy this one. It's actually great. What tangible actions can you take as a result of the seminar to build partnerships between your institution and India?
Oh, no, that's a great question. you're right. So this answer is pretty specific to us, but I'm going to maybe overstep just a little and tell you some of the things that people said while we were there, because our group was all different kinds of schools, our own cohort, the people who were participants. The Fulbrighters were from all different kinds of schools and at all different levels within those institutions, exactly as you described, all the way from an advisor in the study abroad office to vice president. So for the University of South Carolina, we met with several universities who had either research opportunities, summer exchange programs, or just traditional exchange programs that aligned with just how we do business in our overall opportunities for faculty and student exchange. And those I passed on to the person who manages exchanges. And he's done some follow-up. We're probably going to also participate in the recruiting fair. It is another team within the same office that provides assistance to Indian students who are interested in doing either short-term or degree-seeking study in the United States. And I learned more about that while I was there, and we will participate in that in some way. We haven't decided for sure yet. That will be a first for us here at the University of South Carolina. And then I also just have a lot of faculty here who I know about their research, or I know about their interests in the classroom or traveling with students, and so your antenna is just sort of up when you're in an experience like this. And so, for example, we met with a university that has a very, very strong area of research in fisheries, which is, coastally very interesting, but not something that we do much here at the University of South Carolina. So I went into that meeting thinking, that'll be interesting, but I'm probably just listening here. But then when the actual faculty member started talking, I realized that there was this whole aspect of his research that related to climate that's exactly the same as what one of our faculty here is doing. So I introduced them virtually, and they have an ongoing conversation happening now. So I would say some of it is dependent on your needs. Some of it's dependent on who you meet. You can't meet everyone. But also now I have a sense of what I would ask, how I would ask it when we go back, so that we're speaking, there's more of a shared understanding now that I think I can facilitate so much better. Instead of just walking in and saying, here's what we'd like to do, how does that strike you, I can really frame it in a way that I know is more typical for how this happens there instead of just how it happens here.
Wow, that was great. Thank you so much for that. As a quick note, I know we are over on time. Mary Rolfe and I are going to stay on and keep answering questions, but just in case either Joan or Brent are in a hurry to go on to something else, I just want to thank you both for being on today and allow you the option to leave if you have to. But thank you both for the insight you did provide. I just didn't want to miss that opportunity.
Thank you so much for having me. I actually do have to run, but Mary Rolfe, and so you have the permission to give anyone who wants it my email address. And
wonderful.
Anyone who wants it specifically, I would be delighted.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Joan.
My pleasure.
Have a great day, Joan.
Hi, Joan.
Brent,
are
you still going to stay with us?
I can stay for a few minutes.
All right. Well, we will keep on going then. Let's see. So one of the questions that did come in was from a community college, and maybe Brent has some insight on this, but it was in relation to how likely they would be selected. I'd be remiss to not say that there is the Community College Administrator Seminar to Russia. However, all of the other IEA awards are open to community colleges. So that one is specifically for you. But community colleges are key demographics and institutions within the United States. So these countries are very much intrigued to get your insight. Brent, did you actually have any community college administrators as part of your cohort? Do you know?
We did not, and I guess the one thing I would say is in our visits in Taiwan, we did not visit any community colleges, and I don't recall that there were community colleges in Taiwan. I think that tends to be an American type of structure. But saying that, I would say that in Taiwan, the institutions were very interested in relationships to bring students from the U.S. to study there, and were very interested in programs of various lengths. So, you know, we typically think of study abroad in terms of semesters, but there are many opportunities that could be shorter than that, or there are opportunities for full-year programs. Faculty exchanges, those are all opportunities. Beyond that, I don't know how to answer that specifically.
Perfect. No, that it's good just to know your insight on that. But I have seen in other cohorts, they definitely do have community colleges. It just depends on if there are applicants that year. And so the best advice I think Mary Rolfe and I can give is apply and ask us questions throughout the process. We'd be more than happy to assist as well. Going off of that, Mary Rolfe, there were a few applicants that are curious about how many applicants are chosen for each of the awards. Can you provide a little more insight, kind of going back to that again?
Yeah, of course. So I'll start with India and Taiwan. So India is approximately 10 grants. You'll notice that we kind of use different phrasing as far as the number of grants. So we might have up to, or a definite number, or, you know, around this many people. So India is going to be approximately 10 grants, and then Taiwan is up to 12 grants. One thing I will say, though, about the number of grants offered and you know, how competitive an award is, or, you know, what are your chances? There's more grants offered, so maybe I'll go for that one because I have a better chance. Don't do that. It's not going to work out well for you in the sense that playing the numbers is never going to work out well, because you want to just apply to the award that makes the most sense for you, because that's where you're going to be competitive. If there are, you know, 500 grants open, but, you know, none of these people seem to be suitable, then we're not going to pick 500 people randomly, you know. So don't worry too much about the number of grants offered. Focus more on the professional profile and your experience and your institution's need.
Great. Thanks so much. We do have a few questions coming back to reading applications from last year or previous years, and I'll kick it to you in 1 second, Mary Rolfe, but I cannot stress enough, please email us your CV and obviously your contact details and set up an advising appointment. We obviously need time to be able to access your previous application, but we'd be more than happy to set aside time to give you tips of how to bolster your application. I will now kick it over to Mary Rolfe so she can provide some more details.
Yeah, so just like Sarah said, I am very open to helping you guys with feedback. So one thing I will say is the peer review process is confidential. So I can't share their exact notes as to why maybe they would have recommended or not recommended you. In addition, we don't receive comments from the Fulbright commissions abroad as to whether or not why they selected one person over another or things like that. But what I can do is I can look at your CV, I can look at your past applications, and see, you know, are you applying for the right country? Are you a primarily outbound advisor that's applying to, you know, Korea and Japan that really is looking more at international students and inbound advising? You know, did you only submit a two-page project statement when you really should have tried to use all 5 pages of that space that you have for your project statement? Did you get the right recommendations as far as were your reviewers the right type of people? All kinds of things like that I'm happy to help with. Just email us and we'll get back to you.
Great. And I know, Brent, you said you had to go shortly. If I can give you one last question before we release you, that would be great. We did have a few questions that were submitted ahead of time on the letter of recommendations. Could you provide insight on who you chose and kind of who you would express interest on for these applicants on who to look at to write these letters of recommendation? Any insight you have would be great.
Sure. I think obviously whenever you have references, it needs to be someone who does know you. It can speak honestly about the special interests that you have in this program, as well as the experience and skills that you may be bringing. So obviously, as we said earlier, one of those references needs to be your supervisor, which was, in my case, happened to be the president. I chose the provost mostly because as someone that I've worked with for 17 years at Illinois State, in that case, in interesting ways, we've been colleagues. I've been her supervisor. She had a unique perspective on me and my experience and then my specific interest in this. And then the other person that I used was a person that I referred to earlier as our Fulbright coordinator on campus, because she knew of my specific interest in the Taiwan program, as well as having been a Fulbright and being able to refer to her experiences and how that might relate to my interests.
Brent, I think that's a really great point, too, that you said about making sure you're choosing people for your referees that know you, that can speak to you. It's not necessarily about the status and the name behind who is writing your reference letter. It's really about how much are these people going to go to bat for you and vouch for you and know you and want to see you succeed and receive this grant.
Yeah, I definitely couldn't have said that better myself, so that's very key to ask those questions. I think the last question that we really have to focus on, and Mayor Roth, perhaps you can take the reins on this, is in terms, I believe this one is in relation to the India program, it mentions the 5 years of experience. Is that in the current position of higher ed in general? Is that in their current position or within higher education in general? This person has more than 5 years of higher education experience, but not within their senior administration. They're just looking for insight.
This is a good question, and I would hesitate to give you kind of a yes or no of whether or not you're eligible. It's best for me to see a CV first. What I will say is that, you know, some of these experience levels, they'll say 5 years in specifically international education, or they'll say, you know, 5 years in higher education administration. So it really does vary as far as what they're looking for. Another thing I will say is that sometimes, you know, your international experience, occasionally, you know, your living abroad experience will count towards that. Sometimes it won't. It's going to depend on what type of position you had, how long you were there, and all different kinds of factors. One thing I will say is that for any of the awards, you do not have to be at one singular institution in one singular job for 5 years or 3 years. The one slight potential exception to that is with Germany. They like to see that you've been at your home institution for at least a year, just because they want to see that you're somewhat established, that you're not a brand new fish out of water, that nobody's really going to want to invest in this opportunity and really hear what you have to say when you come back, because you haven't really made a name for yourself at the institution. But other than that, I would recommend that you send me your CV. So send us an email with the CV and you know, what programs you're looking at, and I'll be able to better assess what your eligibility is like.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Mary Rolfe. I promise she really does love to get Charles' emails, so please do email her. So with that, I know we have gone over, I believe we've gone to most of the questions that have been presented. If you feel your question wasn't answered to the extent that you wanted, please email us at iea@iie.org. Both Mary Rolfe and myself are in that inbox. But again, thank you once again to Brent for being on this call and staying a little bit later. We truly appreciate the insight that you bring.
You're welcome, and I would also offer that if anyone, you can share my email address, and anyone that would be want to contact me, if I can help, I'd be glad to do so.
Perfect. We truly appreciate that, and the alumni are so great in how they just wish to help other applicants for these programs. So with that, all I can do is encourage you to start your application, get in the system now, look at what you need to do and submit, and just get a head start. The deadline, again, is August 1st, so don't miss your opportunity. Our contact details are on this PowerPoint, and we will send out the recording as well as the slides to everyone. But again, thank you for staying on longer than you planned. We know everyone is busy, but we hope you have a wonderful rest of the afternoon and the week.
Great. Thank you guys so much. Have a great evening.